Yo, what up? Welcome to another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. I'm Patrick, and today my guest is from the same sports network, podcast network that I'm on, Fans First Sports Network, Chris Madrigal from the Town Tailgate podcast, which is a really, really good Oakland A's podcast. If you follow the A's, then you should definitely follow Chris and his show. Welcome, Chris.
What's up, man? I'm super pumped to be here. I'm super pumped for the season as an A's fan. I think you're, the title of your show says it all, the Oakland Warriors podcast. So if these are Oakland Warrior fans, and they're probably also Oakland A's fans, so they're probably understand the depression that I've been going through this past season. And not even to say the least about the Raiders, who are just on an epic downward spiral right now. So I'm just ready for basketball season to start so I can have some positivity in my life and my sports fandom, because it's just freaking miserable right now.
Yeah, yeah. Real quick, I'm just curious about, in terms of the A's, because, you know, I've taken a step back from being a following baseball, especially doing this Warriors podcast all the time. I take my summers and chill a little bit, but what's the temp of people back in the Bay, your listenership, you know, Oakland folks? Because losing the Raiders again to another city, this time to Vegas, and the A's to Vegas, it's like, what's the vibe?
I think it's just anger. That's kind of the most of the vibe that I'm getting from like A's Twitter and like A's fans. It's just like, they are in shock, but also not surprised. It's, you know, it's kind of a weird situation to understand, because like this particular owner just flat out is a POS. Like he absolutely is terrible. This was a total money grab for him going to Vegas. I think he's going to be extremely, him and Major League Baseball are going to be extremely disappointed in the financial results of doing a baseball team in Vegas, because like, I mean, the Raiders work not because Vegas loves the Raiders, but because the opponent that they're facing that particular Sunday wants to make a reason to take a trip to Vegas. If I'm a Patriots fan and I see the Raiders on their schedule, that's a reason for me as a Patriots fan to do a weekend in Vegas with my buddies. So it's like, you go to a Raiders game and it's like, maybe 55% Raider fans, maybe even less than that. It's so like, to see that on a baseball scale, 82 games, like baseball fans are not going to show up in to that stadium, and they are not going to, and it's going to be hot, and it's going to, you know, it's just like, I just don't see how that works. It was just a money grab from this owner, but you know, like honestly, A's fans shouldn't be too like surprised, because like we kind of have a history of bad owners basically since the Haas family sold the team. So it's just like, it's been a trend, and owner after owner have taken advantage of the reputation of the A's and Billy Bean and having good talent on cheap payrolls, so they can just put money in their pocket. So it's just sad. It's sad to see. It's depressing for me. I'm pretty cynical about the whole situation, to be honest with you.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of people, a lot of A's fans who think that, you know, it's not official until shovels are in the ground. I don't think so. I think that they were gone months ago. And, you know, as much as I love that team and the diehard fan, I just, when they move, that's going to be it for me. And I have, you know, I'm a third generation A season ticket holder. I don't own season tickets, but my parents did. My grandparents did before that. So I was born and bred to be an A's fan. And I think I just can't support an owner who just doesn't care about his fans and doesn't care about the baseball team, you know? So it sucks and it's depressing, but that's just kind of the state of the A's, and they have a lot of young talent too. Like, you know, it would have been nice to root for them in a couple of years, but I'm Oakland till I die, Patrick. I'm Oakland till I die, and I can't support that.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I remember back in the day when the Raiders first left, I was pretty bummed, right? And then they came back and I was a little bit older, you know, and it always felt like, the analogy I used to use for Al Davis, or just the Raiders leaving back then was that episode. Again, this is in the 90s when they came back. Yeah. That episode of The Fresh Prince where Will Smith's dad, played by Ben Vereen, shows up and he expects to, like, you know, have everything be fine again. It's like, hey, yo, y'all left, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And now you're coming back and now you want the stadium, PSLs, Mount Davis, all this stuff, mm-hmm. ruin Oakland Coliseum. I remember all that. And I've never been a Raiders fan since, you know, like I'll tune in, you know, I was obviously pulling for them in the Tuck game and everything.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Ever since, it's just like, you know, the loyalties have just gone away. So, which is crazy. Cause like in LA, Raiders fans are still Raiders fans, but I think that's embedded into some of the subcultures here a little bit more deeply than others. But anyway, I'm bummed about the A's. But as you said, the Warriors season is upon us. Some happier times, hopefully. last season wasn't happier times. And I've talked yeah. about that ad nauseum. But I'd like to ask guests what your Warriors fandom, like, just, you know, in like a minute or so, like,
yeah,
when did you start being a fan? Like, what's your favorite memory, you know, going to a game or whatever? What you got?
So I apologize for that first long-winded answer. So I'll try to keep it shorter on this one. Yeah, man. I mean, I grew up, my parents aren't really like, my family's not really basketball family. Like, I had friends who were basketball fans. I have some family, but I wasn't like super into the sport. It was that 2002 Kings team, Sacramento Kings team that got me into basketball. That Chris Webber, Mike Bibby, Doug Christie, Vlade Divac, like Bobby Jackson off the bench, like that team with that run, the Western Conference Finals, you know, we don't have to get into all that stuff, but like I was like super into that team and I loved watching them, especially after that conference finals win. And like that team just like got me into the sport. I started playing at school, I started playing with my friends around the neighborhood, and I just wanted to watch the game, I just wanted to watch basketball. But like, which is weird, you would think that in the Bay Area, you know, like the Giants and A's share a television market. If anywhere you live in Northern California, you can get both of those teams and you can watch them. In basketball, if you live in the Bay Area, you only get Warriors games. If you're mm-hmm. north of, I think Santa Rosa is like kind of where the cutoff line is, you know, that Sacramento area, you only get Kings games. So it's like, I could only watch the Kings when they were on national television. So all I wanted to do was watch basketball games, and I would go look at like the TV Guide channel and I'd be like, oh, the Warriors are playing. And I would just start watching the Warriors, and I just got repetitive. And that team was like Mike Dunleavy, Antoine Jameson, Jason Richardson, Troy Murphy, like that era. So like 2003 to like 2005, I was watching a lot of Warriors, and like, it was disappointing, but they were like fun, young and interesting. So they just kind of like, I just gravitated towards them. I bought like a Jason Richardson jersey. I actually still have it. It's like in my closet right now. It's like a medium. It doesn't fit me, but it's like, you know, it's like my first basketball jersey, so I can't get rid of it. And I just got in the Warriors that after that, watching Jason Richardson do those crazy dunks and stuff like that. And then, you know, like it kind of cooled off a little bit because they weren't good. Like they were fun, they were talented, but they just weren't good enough to get to the playoffs. And then 2007 came along. We Believe, got the We Believe poster right behind me. It just changed everything. And I was all in after that. We Believe, like a lot of Warriors fans, our generation, like millennials, that team is what like got me. And I was diehard after that. Like I was all in. I was watching every game, every season, even the Corey Maggette years that were depressing. I was still watching those teams. So that, yeah, that's it. And just been diehard ever since.
Nice, man. Nice. Yeah. Like, when did you like, the Kings affiliation, when did you, was it the We Believe team that transferred you over?
Yeah.
100%?
Yeah. I was like in the middle before that. I think when they traded Chris Webber, the Kings, that was kind of the last straw for me where it was like, all right, like I'll follow this team, but like, I don't know, you know, they got rid of my favorite player. I'm not, you know, I don't know how this is going to go. And then the We Believe, like right when that happened was when We Believe started. So it was like, it just completely changed everything. It was a major just momentum shift. And I was older. I understood the game more. I understood what was going on. So I think like a more mature mind gravitated me more towards like that. You know, they were more fun to watch. It was just easier to jump on that train.
Let's talk about what is coming up. And, you know, since I asked you to come on the show, a couple things happened. Let's just talk about those right quick. So the Warriors, they signed Rudy Gay. I believe he's like 37, 38 years old. And yeah, after he got signed, everybody's like, oh, yeah, we got Rudy Gay, you know, like another wing. And then other people were like texting me saying, you know, he shot 25% from three and 35% from the field last year. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Rudy Gay coming to the Warriors on a pretty cheap deal? It was like a one year non-guaranteed or something. So,
yeah,
low risk, medium reward, I think.
I mean, let's call it what it is. He's the 15th guy off the bench. Like that's what it is. He's the 15th guy. He's when Moody and Kuminga are hurt, he's going to get some minutes and that's about it. I mean, I didn't think too much of it. I forgot that he was still in the league, to be honest with you, man.
I feel like he's one of those dudes. Like if you call him, he's in the league. If you don't, he's not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm here, but I'm not. And, you know, like, I think it's funny how they've completely gone, like the pendulum swung the other way in a lot of ways that they're going super old, even though they got some young dudes still. But
I feel like that's what Kerr wanted all along. I think that Bob kind of forced him into like the let's do young and old and let's mix the eras. I think Kerr has always been like Pop. He wants the older guys.
Yeah, I mean, because when you look at some of these coaches and GMs in general, it's like they are there for X number of years, like their contract, and then you want to win, and you can see an 18, 19 year old isn't going to be like the one necessarily help you right away. But I think one thing I don't want is like for Kerr to opt for Rige over like Kuminga or Moody, as he tends to do, because those guys need to play. I think if Rudy Gay, like, you know, it's like, sure, you know, you need to, somebody gets hurt, throw him out there, and that's about it. It's another veteran dude, another old head that can, you know, just be somebody that's closer to Steve Kerr's age, I suppose.
Yeah.
Did you have any thoughts on Dunleavy saying that the Warriors, in terms of Dwight Howard, that they already have like five centers, so, you know, didn't really make a move on Dwight?
I have some friends who were upset. I just don't know what Dwight brings to your team. This current adoration of Dwight Howard, I don't know what he brings to the Warriors that Trayce Jackson Davis, who is younger, is more athletic, is probably more durable now, can bring to that team, or taking minutes away from Looney, the greatest rebounder in the history of the NBA. And like, you know, I mean, I just don't know what he brings. Like, there's probably a reason why he's playing in China. Let's just say that. I mean, like, if he was
Taiwan,
if he was good enough to be on an NBA roster and a valuable member of the NBA roster, then he would be on an NBA roster. I don't care how annoying he is. There are guys who have worse off the court issues than him that are on teams currently right now, you know? So it's just like, you know, and the other thing, just with Rudy Gay real quick, the first thought that comes to mind when you see that signing is you're like, oh, veteran presence in the locker room. This team doesn't need veteran presence in the locker room. This team is full. This team's core is veteran presence in the locker room. So like, that's another thing that didn't put. So like these two free agent issues or free agent scenarios, I just didn't see the point for them. I don't, yeah. You know, like
Well, then you throw in Corey Joseph, and like they took two guys and from Detroit, and Rodney Magruder, who I've said this before and I'll say it again. Always loathed Corey Joseph's game when he was in Toronto, like in Detroit. It's just like, it feels like he just puts his head down and goes like, it's me time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know he probably won't be able to do that, but I'm not super excited. Like, you know, like I've said before, if once those guys are on the court at the same time, I'm taking a long bathroom break, because that's gonna be some ugly basketball if they ever end up on the court together at the same time. But yeah, Rodney, Rodney, you know, giving Draymond somebody else to smack this in the preseason. I don't know. Any thoughts on those dudes?
I mean, I think the Corey Joseph thing is more. The only reason why I would think that the Warriors brought him in. One, they need a second unit point guard. Like, they just do. A second and third unit point guard. And they need someone to bring the ball up and you know, kind of run the court. And the only way I can see how Corey Joseph ended up on the team is that Dunleavy had a very serious conversation with Corey Joseph's agent and told him, like, your job is not to put your head down and drive to the hoop and try and score. Your job is going to be on this team to feed these two young guys who it looks like are going to be the offensive breadwinners of the second unit in Kuminga and Moody. We can talk more in depth about this later, but like, I just don't know where the offense is coming from in the second unit. And the only rationalization I can think of is that Kuminga and Moody sat down with Kerr in the offseason and were like, we want a bigger role. And he was like, okay, I'll give it to you. You guys can be the offensive power horse of the second unit, but you have to step up to the plate and do it. So like, I just think that that's what Corey Joseph's, I know that's not his history of gameplay though, which is interesting, but that's the only like role I could see him having on this team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, the way I look at it is he is a veteran insurance guy in case, you know, Chris Paul gets hurt, Steph gets hurt, so they don't have to turn to a Ty Jerome, young dude, unproven, mm-hmm. more or less, somebody of
turning the ball over like crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and I liked Ty Jerome. So again, just like a somebody who is just a veteran, because that's the way they're obviously leaning, as we said, but. You know, second unit, like, I don't see Corey Joseph on that second unit. Like, I see the second unit with, you know, Steve Kerr has his rotations, right? It's not like hockey substitution. So it's Chris Paul, it's Saric, it's Kuminga, Moody, and maybe Wiggins or, you know,
put Gary Clay Payton at three too.
Or, yeah, GP2. So, like, you know, you're not going to hopefully see Corey Joseph unless – at some point in the preseason training camp or whatever, he really shows that he deserves minutes. I mean, I think the same thing is true for Magruder. I don't actually know Magruder's fit. The dude is 6'4". He's fine. You know what I mean? I'm not going to, he's better than me. So I'm not going to knock him, but like, you know, where do all these dudes fit? Because again, you're still kind of getting smaller and whatnot. So I don't know if all those guys are going to be on the team by like come March, April or whatever. Then, you know, that being said, like, I don't like Corey Joseph's game, but of course, if he's getting signed, then he will probably most likely fall in line in this at this point in his career. But yeah, in terms of the second unit, like, I'm not super concerned, honestly, about the scoring. I think
okay, Chris Paul, who do you score? Who do you score in the second unit? But that's the other thing. That's the other thing. Chris Paul has not been healthy the past two seasons of his career. Are we expected to believe that he's going to be able to play 22 plus minutes a game? Like, someone else is going to have to run point in on that bench besides him and besides Steph. So it's like, it's Corey Joseph or Gary Payton. Gary Payton's never really been like the point guard.
No,
like,
he's not.
You know, never really been like the quarterback on the court. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they'll have to mix it up, right? Like, a couple years ago, I said after the Suns lost to Dallas in the playoffs, I was like, Chris Paul's done, you know? Like, I don't trust him getting anywhere deep into the playoffs at all. And it's like, hey, guess what? He's on our team now. That sucks.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Like, if he goes down, then they're going to be in trouble. But I think that they have enough to mix and match. I think, you know, you could put Clay on the second. You could put, you know, like, I believe in Kuminga. I hope Moody takes the next step. And I think if Chris Paul is healthy, I like the fact that he can shoot the mid-ranger. I like the fact that Saric, he can get guys involved. What the Warriors had last season with their second unit was Jordan Poole, who is replicating Steph. And in this way, they get a different look, a guy who can actually get guys' shots. So, you know, everybody's hyping up like, oh, how Chris Paul will be. He'll unlock Kuminga the way he unlocked
DeAndre Ayton,
exactly. Yeah. Like, or all those bigs.
Or Gallinari a few years ago, or Shea Gildas-Alexander. Yeah.
So you know, but it all comes down to health, especially with all the teams in the West, all the old head teams, right? Where it's like, you know, you got an old Kevin Durant, you got a old LeBron James, and a frail Anthony Davis, and an old frail Paul George, and an old frail Kawhi Leonard. The Warriors just happen to have more old frail dudes. So it's all about like just being healthy and peaking at the right time, as we know, for this team. So, you know, we'll see how the first few months go. I mean, I don't know. Were you a Poole fan?
I was, I just have such mixed feelings towards him, dude. Like when he got punched in the face last offseason, I was like, I was out on Draymond. Screw you. Like, this is the last straw. Like, you just can't go around just punching teammates. But then, like, you know, hearing the stuff behind the scenes about how he was acting, and then you see his gameplay and kind of the way he's playing, kind of it reflects a little bit of his attitude off the court that you're hearing, you know, being like playing hero ball. Like, let's just say by the end of the season, especially playoff time when he was just horrendous in the playoffs, I was tired of the two scenarios of Jordan Poole. One, he bring the ball up and take a 30-footer and expect it to go in like Steph Curry. Or he'd bring the ball up and he'd lose it and a turnover would happen. Like, I was just so over that Jordan Poole and his, like, selfish is not a good word, but, you know, his ISO ball, his ball hog playing. And I was, when the Chris Paul trade happened, I had a lot of Warrior fans, friends who were mixed feelings. I was pumped about it because to me, so we already had one of probably the best assist man and best passers in the past 10 years of the NBA, Draymond Green. And we just added the second best. So, and with the two best shooters in the history of the game on our team, like, these guys are going to freaking find these guys no matter what. And they are going to get these guys, get Steph Curry, get Klay Thompson, get these guys open in places that we've never seen before. Like, and it felt like that, especially in the playoffs, like, when Jordan Poole would come in, he kind of shut down guys like Klay Thompson. Like, it would be like 5 minutes would go by and you'd be like, man, Klay hasn't put up a shot in a while. Like, what is happening here? And he would kind of ball stop those guys, where I think that Chris Paul is going to enhance that a little bit more. So I like Jordan Poole, but I just don't know if I liked the trajectory he was going on. And I think that they got off of that at the right time.
Yeah. I was more than happy to see him go, like you. I mean, I was, you know, every game, like, I was talking about how tired I was of this trajectory. I don't want to like rehash everything, like the falling down, the heat check, the dancing and prancing pool party BS on one end, and then Matador defense on the other, right? Like, I actually couldn't really stand all the pool party stuff because, like, hey, dude, play both sides of the floor. And I was like, I couldn't understand how they couldn't get him to play better defense. It is what it is. But I mean, Chris Paul being on this team, listen, like, you know, all this talk about will they fit on the court together, you know, the vets and whomever, Draymond, like I said this in the last episode, it's like Draymond and Chris Paul are basketball geniuses, right? So they will figure out how to do it. And they're also on the downsides of their careers. So they're mature. Well, to some extent, right?
Well, we say that now, and then a week later, and then a week from now, Draymond Green's going to punch someone else in the face, and then we're going to change our mind.
Yeah, it's going to be Rodney Magruder.
Yeah, bro.
But when it comes down to those guys on the court, I think, you know, when the 2020 draft was coming up and everybody's like, is it going to be Anthony Edwards or LaMelo or Wiseman or somebody else? I wasn't a big LaMelo guy, and I don't know if that actually would have worked out, but like, I did think it would be great to have this amazing passing point guard who could get Steph and Klay off ball and just have them running around. And
it's what Steph does best, dude.
Yeah. And so, you know, Chris Paul is now the best point guard that he's ever played with. And granted, he's like 38 going on 39 or something, but just seeing him in those rotations will be really, really fun and interesting, because you try to, guard Chris Paul and then have Steph and Clay running around separately. I think that'll be really entertaining. And part of it is also just something that we haven't seen as fans before, because assuming reasonable health, this team's going to make the playoffs, right? So like, it's going to be great just to see these dudes in different scenarios and seeing these guys with their skills and mental acumen for the game out there together. And again, that's why, like, with Chris Paul playing with some of these bench dudes, I think he will be able to make sure that the game is flowing, that guys are getting touches, that guys are that they're getting looks and whatnot. You know what I mean? I'm expecting Kuminga and Moody to make a leap, a reasonable leap. They did when they got minutes last year. Kuminga made a huge leap. He shot 37% from three when Wiggins was out and when Gary Payton was injured. And, he didn't get to play after that, right? Like, everybody's questioning, you know, you read all like these, you know, blogs, all, you know, when it's dead over the offseason, and it's like, oh, you know, Trey Kuminga, you know, like, oh, is he going to make, like, he can contribute if you put him on the court. And then we saw with Moody in the postseason as well. So, you know, I think they'll be all right. There will be growing pains, but I think that they'll find their rhythm eventually. I don't think you need like a Jordan Poole heat check guy to shoot you in or out of games, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the rumors that I'm hearing and reading out of the offseason is that Kuminga and Moody have been in the training facility. Like, it's the, like, every single day, like, working on stuff to try and be better, at least offensive players. I mean, Kuminga is a different story on defense. He makes a lot of like kind of dumb mistakes and with the rotations and switching and stuff like that. But offensively, the rumors are that they are in there and they are working and they are trying to like really build up the game, which is why I really think that like Steve Kerr sat down with them, especially after like you saw the disgruntledness, like the clips of Kuminga in the playoffs, like mad that he's not getting playing time. I really think that Steve Kerr sat down with him and was like, look, this is the role that we're going to play. And like, this is what you guys need to do. And you guys need to work on this stuff. And I think they're taking that seriously. We'll see what happens. I kind of want to paint a picture of like what I think the offense will be with, just real quick, with like Chris Paul in it. Like, imagine Chris Paul. He's running. This is like a Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, like lineup. Imagine Chris Paul bringing the ball up. Steph's doing his thing where he's just running, moving screens, moving defenders, getting defenders off of Klay Thompson, getting defenders off of Wiggins, forcing defenders to switch and move around. So you got that. He's going to open up the offense for both him and them. And then like Klay's biggest asset since he came back from his injury is like his spot up shooting, which is always what he was doing. He was always a great catch and shoot guy. So if you can just have him kind of sit and like move back and forth and just sit around 3-point line, like that's where he's going to make his shots. And then you have Andrew Wiggins, who's probably the most underrated cutter in basketball, just cutting to the basket. Like, I mean, and then you got two of the best passers that are just playing the inside out game, passing the ball back and forth to try and find the open man. Like, maybe I'm like too excited and I'm just like too like, but there's something about that lineup that just gets me giddy, you know, like, these two great passers, these two guys who are just have amazing basketball IQs to go along with these like incredibly talented and athletic scoring machines in Steph, Clay, and Wiggins. Like, I really think there's a lot of potential for that specific lineup at least.
Yeah. And the one thing that kills me about the Warriors is their inability to get to the free throw line. And one of the things I've hated about Chris Paul is that he's one of those baiters for fouls. And I don't know if they changed the rules a couple seasons ago and then they eased up on the rules. I don't know if they are going to enforce them more, but if they still give him some of those calls, that is great to me. You know what I mean? Because they need to get to the line. Poole could not get to the line enough because he would fall down all the time. Steph doesn't get calls. I've said before that part of it, I think, is because they don't get up very high on their drives in traffic, that a lot of the contact comes low and a lot of the refs let those go. But, and also because, you know, maybe they mouth off to the refs a lot as a team, but, you know, yeah, I'm excited by all that. Do you have any concerns? The big question I think is, who's going to start, what the starting lineup is going to be. I've said, obviously it's who finishes is what really matters. And that might be kind of on a matchup game to game basis, but do you have any concerns that it's going to be this huge issue?
I think that Steve Kerr is going to like reinvent this. I think that he is salivating at the mouth when he got Chris Paul, the idea that each game he can play the matchups of the starting lineup instead of just like a set starting lineup every single game. It's like, all right, well, let's say they're playing Milwaukee, for example. You know, you got Brook Lopez and you got Giannis. So you got two big athletic guys. Like Chris Paul is probably going to be coming off the bench that game. So you're talking probably Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, and Kevon Looney, you know, to try and like wear down Brook Lopez and Giannis, try and like, you know, really like match up with those big guys. But then let's say you're playing, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a small team. Let's say the Suns. Let's say the Suns, if it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, a bunch of guards.
Beal, Gordon, Booker, yeah. Kevin Gordon. Durant, Nurkic, and like Eric Gordon. Yeah, small lineup. All right, Chris Paul, you're in. You know, Kevon Looney, you're out. Like Draymond, you can handle Nurkic and we'll go from there. You know, I really think that it's going to be a game by game basis. And I think that like that's what Steve Kerr loves. He loves versatility in his lineups. He loves to try new things and he loves guys, which is, I think, why like some of the signings came. It's like he loves guys that are versatile, can play multiple positions and guard multiple people. Right. So I think that this is going to be a new experiment for him. And I think that it's going to really show off the basketball mind that Steve Kerr has, because I think especially in the national media, Steve Kerr doesn't get enough credit for being a great coach and like strategic coach on the bench and utilizing the guys that he has. Warrior fans, we know that because we see it every day, but I don't think national media does that. I think national media thinks
not all Warriors just fans came in the right.
Oh, really? I mean, I genuinely believe that. I haven't talked to a lot of Warriors fans that don't believe that as well, but I think a lot of people think that Steve Kerr was a right time, right place, right time coach. It's the reason why he's had success, but I think that he was a big part of that success personally.
Of course. They don't do this with Mark Jackson, in my opinion. And, yeah. But you know, like on the other side, he doesn't do this if he goes to the Knicks. So, you know, I think with Kerr, it's interesting. I'm curious to see if you're right, because I know that they switch lineups when they have to, like when something's just not working. I know that I feel like he likes to stick to a lineup, but at the end of the day, I believe that, you know, whatever, like this is a good problem to have, right? Trying to make it an issue is just because, oh, that's the thing. That's what we all want to see, how CP3 meshes with these dudes and if there's any fireworks. But, you know, to me, when I look at, you know, this lineup, it's like people are like, oh, if you sit Looney, then they're really small. Draymond plays a lot of centers and he gets beat up. And then if... obviously Steph's not going to sit. Clay is not going to sit because he's in a contract year, right? And he just doesn't like coming off the bench. He's not like one of those dudes who really, really wants to. And I personally think Clay's going to have an amazing year because of the contract year, because he actually played over the summer and people say he looks good. And because he doesn't have to worry about 23, 24-year-old Jordan Poole outshining him, you know, looking over his shoulder. So I think he'll play freer, especially another year away from those injuries. And I think he'll be great. But then I'm like, maybe you sit Wiggins, maybe you put Clay at the three. I don't know.
Wiggins is your best two-way guy though, man. You want to take him off the court on both sides of the ball? Like, oh, man.
Hey, I know. And I also think that Wiggins might not be that great off the bench because he works well with Steph and Draymond. So again, like that's not what I'm saying that they should do. Yeah. I'm saying like, hey, that's why Steve Kerr makes millions of dollars, because this is a good problem to have. And this is where you show what you're saying, like this basketball acumen, you know, and To be honest, like I'm excited, and it's almost like the what I had said about Dwight Howard. I loathe Dwight Howard as well. I've never been a fan of that dude. But if they got him, hey, I'd be curious to see what that looked like just for the hell of it, because it's different from what we saw last year. You know, he'd probably stick on the team for like a month before Kerr was like, get this guy out of here. You know what I mean? So, I'm not too concerned about Chris Paul meshing with guys. I'm just more concerned about his health. Klay Thompson, as I said, he is in the final year of his contract. There was some chatter during the playoffs that he wanted the max, but no one knows where that chatter came from, and it doesn't really matter. And Draymond took less, and all these new salary cap rules. Do you think there's a scenario where it doesn't happen, where he doesn't stay?
I think if the Lakers didn't spend a lot of money this offseason and had cap room to sign him, that would intrigue him a little bit, because he's from LA. I grew up being a Laker fan, but they don't. And they don't for, I think they're pretty tied up the next 3 years. So I don't think that's a reality in his world. So, I'm not saying I thought that was going to happen. I'm just saying like, that's the only scenario I thought that could draw him away from the Warriors, but no. And I think that he'll take a reasonable deal. I mean, $40 million for him now, I don't think is appropriate. And I think he's like the least delusional basketball player in the NBA. And so I think he realizes it enough to be like, all right, like maybe in the mid $30 million a year range. But we'll see. I've been wrong before. I was wrong about Draymond. I thought Draymond was going to want way more money, and he didn't. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah. I thought Draymond would actually come to terms, considering, because, you know, all this chatter, you know, the Klay chatter was like before, you know, Draymond resigned. And I think there's a reality to the situation that, like, whether or not he really did say he wanted the max, you look at where you're at and you take everything into consideration. And I'd said before, I, you know, said what you said, the Lakers were the only team I could ever see Klay leaving the Warriors for, because of Kobe, because being a fan, because of his dad, you know, because growing up in Southern California. So I don't see any scenario at this point, because right now, like Steph flexed around the All-Star break, right? Mm-hmm. Like, get rid of Wiseman. I want Draymond. You know, the more you move young guys, the more you're able to sign Draymond, right? Like, move cool, you know, and get Gary Payton back, right? All that stuff. And I joked that he wanted Gary Payton back just so they had someone to hang out with when they were both injured on the bench, right? Now he has a couple other older heads to hang out with when they're all injured on the bench. Just kidding. But to me, I see Steph wanting Klay just the way he wanted Draymond, and these guys wanting to play together as long as possible and trying to make it work. And obviously Dunleavy is, you know, Curry is in Dunleavy's ear, and they just have like open dialogue about this stuff. Yeah. And you want to make Steph happy. So I think that'll be fine.
This there's an aspect of Klay, some off the field, off the court stuff that like really makes it like, you know, he kind of, I want to say owes a little bit to the Warriors franchise, but you know, he's grateful to them. Brian Windhorst did like a great piece last year. It was also, he came on ESPN Daily. I listen to that podcast a lot, and talked about his piece about Klay and his rehab. And, you know, he had like, it was a really tough year for him mentally. And he like went through depression and stuff like that. And the, you know, Warriors, staff, like their front office, particularly Zaza Pachulia, who is in the front office now, really helped him kind of work through that and helped him like, you know, be like better and you know, just mentally stable, for lack of a better word. Sorry, I'm not like saying the right words on that, but like, you know, it really helped him like come to a happy place and an accepting place, and he's like really happy with his life now. And I think that he does, based on that piece from Brian Windhorst, I think that he does like feel a like the Warriors franchise is like family to him, and he trusts them. So do I think that that helps in his contract negotiations? I don't know. It's a dog eat dog world when it comes to money, but I do think that is in the back of his mind. And I do think that's in the back of the Warriors' mind too, that they do want to take care of Klay because they do, you know, care a lot about him and they do owe him, you know, something.
This whole idea that, you know, he didn't play before last season, everybody brings that up, like he wasn't in shape. When it was spoken that he didn't play and it was because of the mental block of getting hurt playing in the offseason, playing pickup, I'm like I'm not criticizing him for that. You know, I never like I empathize with the dude at that point. And you know, I think like, you know, Zaza, they were such homies before, right? Like when Zaza was actually on the court. And I feel like, yeah, it's just time, you know, working through these things, getting away from this, that, or the other. And, you know, I agree with you. I think he's going to stick around and that they will find a way to work something out. All right. Well, that is another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Patrick E. Pino or at Oakland Warriors. Check out our YouTube channel where you can watch this episode, youtube.com/Oakland Warriors. Check us out at oaklandwarriors.com and be sure to tell your fellow Warrior fan friends to tune in and listen. The Oakland Warriors podcast is produced by National Film Society. And if you're so inclined, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you want to leave us a nice review saying good stuff about the show on Apple Podcasts, that would be hugely, hugely appreciated and it would be very, very helpful. Thanks. That's it.
Music in this episode provided by Paper Sun. Special thanks to Paul Amardo for production support. See you next time, and go Dubs.